Cardinal Jean-Louis Toran is the leading official in the Vatican, responsible for relations between the Catholic Church and the Muslim world. Today, in an exclusive interview for Talk to Al Jazeera, Christians under attack. Who is behind it? And is there room for dialogue? The Vatican speaks out.
Cardinal Jean-Louis Toran, thank you so much for talking to Al Jazeera.
It's a great pleasure for me.
You know, publications in the West lately have been filled with headlines expressing concern about the fate of Christian communities in the Middle East. What is the Vatican's view? Do you see Christians in the Middle East facing annihilation?
Well, Christians in the Middle East, first of all, are sharing the fate of all the people of that region. And where there is no peace, of course, people are not at ease and they suffer. But for me, the great temptation for the Christians of the Middle East is to emigrate. Because when you look at the situation, the peace process is not going on and so on. So when you are a father or mother of a family and you have children to grow up,
you look for somewhere safe.
Of course. And so it's understandable. But I think if the Christian would leave the Middle East, it would be a tragedy because, first of all, they are leaving the earth where they were born, because Christians have been always been in the Middle East, and all the holy places would become museums, and I think it would be a catastrophe.
Do you think, though, when some Christian community leaders talk about a campaign against Christians, from the Vatican's perspective, is there a coordinated campaign against Christians in the Middle East and in other Muslim-majority countries?
Well, a coordinated campaign, I don't know, but sure, if you open the newspaper, you see that in Iraq, Christians are killed, in the Middle East also. Every day we have this news, and you cannot deny that they are the target of a kind of opposition. But sometimes what I feel, I served in the Middle East many years, and what I felt is that Christians have the feeling they are second-class citizens in country where the Muslims are the majority.
Who is targeting the Christians?
Who is?
Yes, in the Vatican's perspective. Who is targeting? Is it one particular group? Is it governments? Is it?
No, it's this fundamentalist group, the extremist groups. Mm. Yes, but when you speak, for example, with the political leaders, of course, they will say they have nothing against Christians.
Do you think that Christians are being targeted because the goal is, by those targeting them, to wipe out Christians, to wipe out the Christian identity from the region? Or are they simply one of other soft targets, victims who are being victimized along with others? I mean, when you take, for example, you mentioned Iraq. It's often attributed, attacks on Christians are often attributed to Al-Qaeda, who are also reported to attack Shia, who are also reported to attack government installations. So how do you see it? Do you see this as an attempt to wipe out Christians because they're Christian, or are they trying to bring down governments and attacking different groups?
Well, you know better than I do that Islam has many sensitivities, many faces. So I think every country, every situation has its own profile. And so it varies from country to another country.
When I speak to some of my Catholic acquaintances, they ask me, they say, ask the Vatican, what are they doing about it? What are they doing to help Christian communities in the Middle East?
First of all, there is a spiritual solidarity by prayer, charity also, there is the diplomatic action of the Holy See and pilgrimages, which are very important for the body of the Holy Land. We have all these pilgrimages all around the year, and it's a very eloquent manifestation of solidarity.
Is the Vatican holding any communication with some of the rising forces in the Middle East, whether it's Syrian opposition, Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, some of these groups?
I don't think so, no. But of course, you have to remember that the church, which is important, is not only the Vatican, the local church. So the local church, the bishops on the ground, have, of course, had many, many contacts with groups we have not. So the Vatican is not the church. The church is a governing body, but the church is the reality, the grassroots level.
The Arab Spring is bringing many changes to the Arab world. How about when it comes to dialogue between different religions? Do you think the Arab Spring will help or hinder that process?
Well, I hope it will help, because when you look at the Arab Spring, what was the dynamic of that movement? That young people who asked for dignity, freedom, job, these are values, of course, that we share with Christian, Muslim, I suppose every human being in the world.
So does the Vatican welcome the Arab Spring in that sense?
Well, I think the Vatican has not to welcome. It's a reality. It's not a question of welcoming. But the problem is that we recognize that the aspirations were good. Now, of course, we have to see who is going to recuperate this spring. Let's just hope it will go towards summer, not towards winter.
And if it brings, as seems to be the case in some of the countries of the Arab Spring, parties which have Islamic roots or parties which have some Islamic orientation, is that a threat to Christians in the region?
I suppose people on the ground will feel like it, yes. But it's not. Let us hope that people who have the leadership will take into consideration that we are living in 2012 and that there is an international law, there is humanitarian law, and experience of history, and that reason will prevail over violence and passion.
Some churches, especially in the United States, they say really the cause of the tension between Christian communities and Muslim populations is the religion of Islam itself. They say Islam is an intolerant, even evil religion. How would you comment on that?
Well, first of all, I should never say that religion is evil, no, I don't think. But you have to remember that we have been Christian and Muslims are in dialogue since many centuries, not only after the Second Vatican Council, like sometimes you read in newspapers, no. We have been in contact since the beginning of Islam. So, of course, there are different chapters, and sometimes violence prevails over dialogue. But I think now there is a great awareness that dialogue, we are condemned to dialogue, as I used to say. And I was reading the other day a university professor of Tunisia who said to his student, please let not your pen drop off your hands, because if you lose your pen, what do you have in your hand? Your knives. And I think this is a very wise recommendation.
But do political developments perhaps sometimes worry you? And just to give an example, you may be making plans for the Pope to visit the Middle East, and we have kind of looming over us this cloud of potential war or attack on Iran. What would that mean to relations between Muslim world and Christian world, to your mission? Would it make things more difficult for you if there is an attack by the United States?
Of course, it would be very difficult, because we are living in not in a stratosphere, we are here on this earth, and we have to be aware of the dangers. But
one of the places where Christian communities are decreasing, and perhaps one of the most important in the Middle East, is of course in the Holy Land. There it's a little more complex, isn't it? There you have a standoff between churches and Palestinian Christian communities and Israeli authorities and the Israeli occupation. What is your message to the Israeli authorities and how they deal with Christian communities?
Well, you see, in the Middle East, you know, especially in the Holy Land, the only thing you can foresee is imprevisibility, because everything can change from the evening to the morning.
I think most people would agree with that.
Yeah. So I should be very cautious, but what I remember when I was there, what I felt is that ordinary people are ready to live together. I think if you speak with ordinary people, and the problem is the ambition or the plans of the political leaders. This is another thing, and of course the Church has not, the Vatican as the Holy See as a subject of international law has not to interfere in that. But the people of the have to choose their leaders. But as regard the Holy See, the Middle East, the Holy Land, which is very important for the Holy See, is the question of the holy places. And this is sometimes a position which is ignored, but I am deeply convinced that if the problem of the holy places is not adequately resolved, there will be no peace in the Middle East. And the Holy See is...
Who is it ignored by? You said it's often ignored.
But if you look at the conversation these last years, nobody spoke about the problem of the Middle East, of the holy places. And the Holy See is the only one who always say, please, don't leave this for the last minute, because it's a very complex problem and it needs to be dealt with great intelligence, with a good knowledge of history. And the Holy See is in favor of a special status, internationally guaranteed, for this part of Jerusalem intramuros, where the places of the holy places of the three monotheistic religions are still open to the believers.
You've spoken about your perspective on the dangers, the attacks on Christians. How would you address the concerns of Muslims from their perspective of invasions into Muslim countries, attacks on Muslim communities as being at the root of tension between Muslims and Christians? How would you address that concern?
Well, this is, of course, nothing to do with religion. These are political options which are taken in order to favor a political line. But I think you must always respect the beliefs of the others, their holy places, their holy books, all these treasures which belong to each community. Otherwise, this is a jungle, and we see the result.
And on that issue of respect for holy books and the understanding, do you think that perhaps inadvertently the Pope contributed to the misunderstanding between Muslims and Christians by that speech he gave in 2006 at Regensburg? Has his view of whether Islam is a faith of reason and tolerance changed at all?
Well, the problem of this speech is that it was in German language, and the pool of journalists who were attending the meeting, most of them did not understand German. So they have an approximative translation, but when you look at the text, you realize that the Pope said exactly what you said, that religion religion and violence are a contradiction in terminis. Mm-hmm. So, and the Pope explained himself very, very well, and twice, and I think I can tell you that during my tenure in this dicastery, practically nobody spoke about this or my Muslim interlocutor spoke about this discourse, because it has been so brilliantly explained by the Pope. And if you read the text, I mean...
Well, I have been reading the text, and I guess one of the questions, the unanswered questions to many in the Muslim world, when you read the text from the Vatican official website and the translation that has been given by it, there does appear to those who read it and are familiar with Muslim history to be perhaps a misquoting of some of the Islamic texts. And to give an example here, if I could quote from what the Pope was saying, he says, Surah number 2 of the Quran, verse 256 reads, "There is no compulsion in religion." The Pope goes on to say, "According to some of the experts, this is probably one of the surahs," meaning the chapters, "of the Quran of the early period, when Muhammad was still powerless and under threat." But in fact, when you look into the chapter he's referring to in the Quran, you find that it is referred to as a Madinite surah or chapter, meaning from the later period. So the message of tolerance is in the later part of the Quran, not in the earlier period. Did the Pope, would you concede that the Pope perhaps misunderstood some of the Islamic texts?
I think the Pope is quoting the book of Quri.
The book of?
Quri, the famous, when you find this quotation.
Oh, no, sir, that's actually from the Quran, chapter 2, yes, verse 256.
Yes, but it is referred to the text of this Mr. Khoury, I think.
Mr. Khoury, that was a reference to his understanding of a dialogue between Emperor Manuel. But here, the Pope is clearly referring to the Quran, chapter 2, verse 256, and he even states, there is no compulsion in religion. That is a verse from the Quran.
Famous, yeah.
A very famous verse. But, I mean, when you look at it in the Quran, it says, revealed in Medina, meaning a Madinite chapter, which is from the later period, not the earlier period. Would you concede that perhaps there was a mistake in referring to Islamic texts here?
Well, the Pope wrote this speech as a professor, as a matter of fact, and I suppose during his holiday he took note, and perhaps at the end, I don't know what happened. But
it's possible there could have been a mistake there.
But I think this is not... This Pope has a very great respect for Islam, and I think there is no Pope who has been outspoken about Islam.
I guess the point of this, all of this is that the idea, when you address a European audience and you say Muhammad and the Quran only talked about tolerance in the early period when he was weak and under threat, but later the Quran talks about war, do you think that might give the wrong message to a European audience which has a lot of concerns about immigration, especially Muslim immigration? It might play into the hands of right-wing groups that say, don't let these Muslims in, don't deal with them softly. They may be nice, tolerant people now, but if they become powerful, they will destroy the European values of tolerance.
Well, you are right to say that in Europe there is a fear of Islam. But I think it's due to ignorance, because when you speak to these people, I've spoken to so many of these right-wing groups, you realize they never opened the Quran and they never met a Muslim. So I said, we have to do a great effort to inform, otherwise, if we succeeded in avoiding the clash of civilization, let us avoid the clash of ignorances, because most of the problems are coming from misinterpretation or ignorance.
Do you see the rise of the right wing in Europe as a threat to tolerance?
Well, yeah, in a way, yes. Because if people are not taught, if you don't read, if you don't, of course, the prejudices are always very strong.
So what would be your message perhaps to authorities in Switzerland that seek to ban minarets, or authorities in France that seek to impose legal penalties on face veils? What would your message be to them?
I should say, before talking, inform yourself about the meaning of a minaret, for example. Inform yourself about the beliefs of the others. And different religions can be a kind of spiritual emulation for the believers, not only opposition.
You're responsible for dialogue between different religions. What about dialogue between sections of society that are religious and sections of society that are more secular and not so religious? Does there need to be a dialogue between those two communities?
Yes, this is a great novelty of this Pope, who associated to the dialogue between believers also the agnostic. I mean, the agnostic are those who cannot affirm that God exists, but who don't deny it. And I think we can have a great possibility of a common action, especially for education and charitable institutions and so on.
And do you think that when I speak to some of my Catholic friends, they say that when you look at recent criticism of the Church, the allegations of leaked letters from the Vatican, that This is a symptom of that tension and lack of trust between the two. How do you respond to that? Do you think that newspapers like El Fatto Quotidiano are unfairly targeting the church?
Well, to this question, I'm not in a position to answer, because there has been an official declaration, and I think you have to respect what was said that. But what I think in Europe, that there is a great necessity of combating idolatry.
How would you answer those who say that there have been dialogue initiatives for a long time? They haven't achieved their results, have they? Something more practical needs to be done.
I think that the future is school and university. We must teach the religious facts of history in order that there is a common ground.
In the East or the West or both?
Both, everywhere. For example, I have seen a book of history which is taught in the Middle East in public schools. The Christians are never called Christian; they are always called misbelievers. This is not right. The Christians are the Christian. It's a question of honesty. No? So if we have at school, we can forge a nation, you can shape a mind. And I remember when I was in Cairo last time, a religious woman, a Catholic religious woman who was working in a very poor district of Cairo, told me, the district where I work, there is a church, a mosque and a school, but it is at school that we prepare the future. And I think this is true for all the countries. We have to, the school, we have to have the same tools in order to be able to dialogue.
Are you calling for children in Egypt then to be taught the basics of Christianity in school?
Not because Europe seems to be moving the opposite way and keeping religion out of the classroom.
From
a cultural point of view, I don't say we have to teach Christianism to them, but as a religion, as a cultural factor, in order to have not ambiguity. It's, you cannot build a dialogue and ambiguity. So at least you have to have basic knowledge of the elements of other religions in order to respect somebody who is believing in another way.
And by the same token, do you think European classrooms need to do the same about Muslims and Islam?
But in Europe, you have also to teach Christianism to the European, because there is the religious analphabetism, that the young generation is ignorant about his own religion. So we have to make a tremendous effort to teach the content of our faith. But I think it's a great pity that in Europe there are so little pages dedicated to Islam. If you look at a French book of history, they're very, very little. And you cannot deny that Islam has beautiful pages of civilization, not only war. And
what is the end goal of your mission? What is the ideal scenario for you that you hope to one day wake up to and find that you can say, I've achieved my mission?
Well, when I shall see around the table a Jew, a Christian, and a Muslim being brothers, then I shall be very happy. And I must say, having lived in Lebanon for many years, sometimes it happened at the past, but I think it can be again a reality.
Sir, thank you so much for talking to Al Jazeera.
Thank you, and all the very best for all your listeners.
Thank you, sir.